If I told you that taking a standard, you know, just an over-the-counter headache pill in your bathroom could cause a vulture thousands of miles away to drop dead from kidney failure, you would probably think I had completely lost my mind.
I mean, it sounds like science fiction, honestly.
Right. Because we treat human medicine as this perfectly enclosed biological loop. Yeah. You take a pill, your headache goes away, and the story just ends there.
But it really doesn't. And that's exactly what we're getting into today.
Exactly. It is Friday, March 20th, 2026, and welcome to today's deep dive. For you, the listener, we are looking at a stack of university lectures and environmental research papers that completely shatter that illusion of the enclosed loop.
We're pulling the camera way back today. The field we're looking at is called ecopharmacovigilance.
Ecopharmacovigilance. It's a mouthful.
It really is. But essentially, it asks us to look at the collateral damage of our own survival.
And the central question we are exploring today traces all the way back to the Hippocratic Oath, written around 245 AD. The absolute bedrock of human medicine is that famous directive, first, do no harm.
Right, the golden rule of medicine.
But what the research today asks is, are our highly advanced, well-intentioned efforts to heal ourselves inadvertently poisoning the planet?
Yeah.
Like, how do the medications sitting in your bathroom cabinet end up fundamentally altering the chemistry of the world's oceans?
To even begin answering that, we have to completely discard the idea that human health exists in a vacuum. The scientific framework that anchors all of these sources is called One Health.
One Health.
Yeah, One Health. It's the biological reality that human health, animal health, and environmental health are not, you know, three distinct fields of study. They are one continuous, highly sensitive system.
It's all connected.
Exactly. The soil feeds the animal feeds the human wastes into the water, and the water feeds the soil. You just cannot sustain a healthy human population on a physiologically sick planet.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that means we need to talk about the macro view, the limits of that planet sickness. The research defines these limits as planetary boundaries. It's basically the ecological ceiling of safe operating space for humanity. It's often visualized as donut economics.
Yeah, think of these boundaries like the load-bearing pillars of a house.
I like that analogy.
If one cracks, the house groans. If several fail, the roof caves in. And there are 9 of these pillars in total.
9 pillars. But the timeline of their structural integrity and the sources is honestly alarming.
It really is. In 2009, scientists determined we had severely compromised 3 of those 9 boundaries. By 2015, 4 were compromised.
Wow, so it's accelerating.
Yeah, and by 2023, it was 6. And by the time the 2025 data was compiled, we had actually crossed 7 out of the 9 boundaries.
I want to pause on that, because simply listing numbers doesn't really explain the mechanics of the collapse, right?
Sure.
Like, if we're in a car and the RPM needle hits the red zone on 7 out of 9 dials on the dashboard, the engine is about to blow.
Yeah.
Why are we still accelerating? If 7 out of 9 load-bearing pillars are cracking, which ones are actively bringing the house down?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the planet provides these incredible, massive services we just take for granted. It stabilizes the climate, it pollinates crops, it cleans water, it decomposes waste.
Right.
But the 2 boundaries failing most critically involve chemical pollution and biosphere integrity, meaning the sheer loss of genetic diversity.
So we're just overwhelming the system.
Completely. Yeah. We are flooding the Earth's systems with novel entities, specifically synthetic chemicals, at a rate that just completely outpaces the planet's biochemical ability to break them down. Those invisible Earth surfaces rely on biological organisms, and those organisms are drowning in synthetic chemistry.
Which brings us to arguably the most shocking revelation in this entire stack of research.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about the Earth filtering our atmosphere, the cultural default, you know, what everyone pictures, is the Amazon rainforest.
Right. The quote-unquote lungs of the world.
Exactly. The lungs of the world. But the biochemistry tells a totally different story.
It does. The visual we have relied on for decades is trees. But the true lungs of the world, the actual heavy lifters of global carbon sequestration, are in the ocean.
Plankton. Microscopic marine algae.
Yeah, plankton. And it's the pasture of the ocean.
The data in these papers shows that plankton produces over 90% of our oxygen and removes the vast majority of our carbon dioxide. 90%. But we have already lost 50% of the world's plankton population.
It's staggering. Half of it is just gone. And the current mortality rate is about 1% per year.
And doing the math on a 1% annual decline, the projections show a total functional loss of global plankton populations within 25 to 30 years. by 2045.
Yeah. So David Attenborough is actually quoted in our sources calling plankton our best ally in the fight against climate change and a literal lifeline for humanity.
A lifeline we are actively cutting.
Right. If the marine food web collapses, atmospheric oxygen levels are fundamentally threatened. But the crucial distinction here, and this is wild, is the mechanism of their death.
It's not the heat.
Exactly. This catastrophic die-off isn't primarily driven by climate change or the warming of the water. It is being driven by chemical pollution.
Which creates this lethal feedback loop with the water itself.
Right.
Right. Because if the plankton die off, they stop eating the carbon dioxide.
Yep.
And when that CO2 just sits in the ocean, it changes the fundamental chemistry of the water.
It creates carbonic acid. So as CO2 dissolves into seawater, it reacts with the water molecules to form carbonic acid, which then breaks down and releases hydrogen ions.
And those hydrogen ions lower the pH.
Exactly, making the ocean more acidic. Let's look at the math. In 1950, the global ocean pH was 8.2. By 2023, it had dropped to 8.04, and by 2045, it is projected to hit 7.95.
Okay, a shift from 8.2 to 7.95 sounds incredibly small on paper. To an average person, that sounds like a rounding error.
It sounds small until you realize the pH scale is logarithmic.
Oh, right, like the Richter scale for earthquake.
Precisely. A drop of just 0.1 represents a 30% increase in acidity. So this shift is violently altering the ocean's chemistry. It literally consumes the carbonate ions that marine life needs to build shells and skeletons.
That's terrifying.
The research is blunt about this. Even if humanity hits net zero emissions by 2030, atmospheric CO2 will still hover around 500 parts per million. The resulting ocean acidification equates to an extinction-level event for marine ecosystems. We literally only have about 2 decades before that chemistry becomes irreversible.
So here's my question. If plankton gives us 90% of our oxygen and the oceans are acidifying toward ecosystem death in 20 years, why is the dominant global conversation always about planting trees instead of saving the oceans?
Well, because terrestrial solutions are visible. You can see a tree grow, you can see a plastic bag floating in the surf, or an oil slick on the beach.
We fight the pollution we can see.
Exactly. We're conditioned to do that. But the chemical pollution driving this aquatic collapse is largely invisible. It's microscopic. You can't see it from the deck of a boat. And an enormous, wildly under-discussed portion of that chemical load is heavily tied to the medications we take every single day.
So this is where we need to connect the chemistry of a pharmacy to the chemistry of the ocean. The sources outline this model, the apothegogenkin, or pharmacist's thinking. It's called LADME, liberation, absorption, distribution, metabolism, and elimination.
Right, the journey of a pill.
But I want to focus heavily on that E, elimination, because here's where it gets really interesting. Think of the human body as just a temporary transit lounge for a pill.
A transit lounge, I like that.
Right, like the medicine comes in, does its job, and catches the next flight out straight into our wastewater. We're talking about APIs, active pharmaceutical ingredients.
And APIs are honestly a marvel of chemical engineering. When a pharmaceutical company designs a drug, it has to meet these incredible structural demands.
It needs a shelf life.
Yes, a shelf life of several years, mm-hmm. And then it has to survive the brutal, highly acidic environment of the human stomach.
Which is like a pH of 1.5, right?
Exactly. Then it travels through your bloodstream, bypasses your liver's metabolic defenses, and binds to specific cellular receptors without breaking apart. To achieve that, chemists build these molecules with super complex ring structures and highly stable carbon-fluorine bonds.
They design them to be indestructible, basically. Armor-piercing vehicles for medicine.
That's a great way to put it.
But that exact chemical armor means the human body doesn't actually know how to dismantle them. It's like a VIP guest in a hotel. The body unlocks the door, the drug does its networking, changes your biochemistry, but because it's a completely alien synthetic molecule, your liver can't digest it for calories.
But it just kicks it out.
Right. Your body just escorts the VIP right out the back door.
And the numbers on this are staggering. Depending on the drug, between 30% and 100% of a medication or its active metabolites is simply excreted by the human body completely intact.
100% in some cases.
Yeah, leaving right through our urine and feces. We tend to imagine pharmaceutical pollution as this glowing industrial sludge leaking out of a manufacturing plant.
Like a cartoon villain factory.
Exactly. But the reality is that 90% of pharmaceutical pollution in the environment comes directly from patient use and excretion.
90%.
Yep. Only 5% is from industrial processes, and the other 5% is from people improperly flushing unwanted meds down the toilet.
Oh, wait. Modern infrastructure is specifically built to handle human waste. We have billions of dollars invested in wastewater treatment plants. If I take a pill and excrete it, it goes to a facility designed to clean that water before it hits the river. Why aren't those facilities catching the APIs?
Well, because wastewater treatment plants are essentially just massive biological stomachs. They rely on bacteria and microbes to eat and break down organic waste, you know, pathogens, solid matter, nitrogen.
Ah, the chemical armor.
Exactly. Remember that armor we just talked about? If human stomach acid and liver enzymes can't break down an API, the bacteria in a wastewater treatment plant certainly can't. The microbes just ignore the synthetic molecules, so the APIs simply float right through the filtration process and discharge directly into the surrounding rivers, lakes, and eventually the oceans.
And the scope of this is terrifying. The sources feature this massive 2022 study published in PNAS by Wilkinson and colleagues. They didn't just model this stuff on a computer. They physically tested 258 rivers across 104 countries.
It is arguably the most comprehensive global river study ever conducted.
Yeah.
They tested over 1,000 sites, 1,052 to be exact, and they found that this pollution is affecting over 471 million people.
Wow.
The highest concentrations were in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and South America, where municipal wastewater infrastructure is frequently overwhelmed.
Right.
And in over 25% of the sites tested globally, the concentration of pharmaceuticals in the water was actually higher than the threshold considered safe for aquatic organisms.
But lest the listener think this is just a problem happening somewhere else, let's look at the local reality. Let's look at Europe, the Danube River. It's Europe's second longest river, supplying water to 81 million people.
Yeah, a massive water source.
Researchers mapped the chemistry of the Danube and found 52 different human pharmaceuticals actively flowing in the current. 52. And 32 of those drugs survived the riverbank filtration systems and made it straight into the drinking water supply.
Yeah. In Budapest, where 90% of the drinking water is riverbank filtered, trace amounts of highly potent drugs are literally coming out of the tap. We're talking about diclofenac, a heavy painkiller, carbamazepine, an anti-seizure medication, lidocaine, and even tramadol, a synthetic opioid.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here. The concentrations we are talking about in tap water are microscopic, right? They are nanograms per liter.
Right, very small.
A human being would have to drink swimming pools of this water to get the equivalent of one single tramadol pill.
Are trace amounts really a threat to humans? Or is this just our technology getting so good that we can detect a drop of ink in an ocean?
It's a fair question. For a human drinking the water, those trace amounts are currently deemed fundamentally safe by health authorities precisely because the dose is so low.
Okay.
However, you aren't just drinking it once. You are consuming a low-dose polypharmacy cocktail of 32 different drugs every single day for decades. The cumulative lifelong effect of that exposure on human biology is entirely unknown, which is exactly why these chemicals are sitting on EU watch lists.
Because we just don't know yet.
Exactly. But more importantly, the immediate victims aren't humans. The immediate victims are the aquatic organisms living and breathing in that water 24 hours a day.
Which brings us to the unwitting patience of the animal kingdom. This ties right back to that One Health concept. Human drugs are engineered to manipulate human biology. But at a cellular level, a lot of our biological hardware is shared across species. Yes, evolutionarily conserved.
Right. Receptors for serotonin or estrogen or pain pathways. So when we flush our medicine, we are effectively giving aquatic ecosystems a massive, unregulated polypharmacy cocktail without a prescription.
What's fascinating here is how devastating the collateral damage in the wild actually is. These APIs are explicitly designed to be biologically active at incredibly low concentrations. It really doesn't take a high dose to trigger a massive reaction in a small organism.
Let's run through some of these case studies from the sources because the biology is astonishing. Take the fathead minnow study from 2007.
Oh, this one is crazy.
Researchers introduced synthetic estrogen, the active ingredient in human birth control pills, into a test lake. Now, in humans, estrogen stops ovulation. But in fish, it acts as a massive endocrine disruptor. It binds to their cellular receptors and completely scrambles their reproductive biology. the male minnows began producing egg yolk proteins.
They were completely feminized.
Exactly. They couldn't reproduce, and the entire lake's fish population collapsed.
And we see similar systemic disruption across the board. There was a 2010 study on leopard frogs. Fluoxetine, which is a common human antidepressant, severely delayed the biological development of the tadpoles.
Even plants aren't safe. In 2011, a study showed that duckweed growth was stunted by ciprofloxacin, which is a heavy-duty human antibiotic.
But the Indian vulture case might be the most heartbreaking.
Oh, man, yeah.
Since 1990, their population has crashed by over 99%. Over 99%. They went from millions of birds to officially threatened. And it wasn't a virus or habitat loss. It was diclofenac.
The exact same over-the-counter painkiller we just mentioned in the Danube River.
Exactly. Farmers in India were giving it to their livestock for joint pain. When the cattle died, the vultures ate the carcasses. But here's the mechanism of that tragedy. A cow and a human have the specific liver enzymes required to metabolize and survive diclofenac. Vultures do not.
Evolution just never gave them that enzyme.
Right. So when a vulture ingests, even earlier, we talked about how APIs are engineered with complex chemical armor. Part of that engineering often makes these molecules lipophilic. That means they dissolve in fat, not water. When these trace drugs enter the ocean, they don't just float freely. They bind to the fat tissues of microscopic plankton and small shrimp. The drugs get trapped in the lipid cells.
Oh, I see. So it stacks. A tiny shrimp absorbs a trace amount of antidepressants from the water. Then a small fish eats 1,000 of those shrimp, storing all of their combined antidepressants in its own fat.
Exactly. And then the bonefish eats 100 of those smaller fish. The concentration magnifies as it moves up to the food chain. The bonefish isn't swallowing pills, right? It is absorbing decades of concentrated fat-soluble pharmaceuticals from its prey.
That is wild.
And this unregulated cocktail destroys their sensory and reproductive organs. The Florida bonefish population has dropped 50% in 4 decades. The researchers actually shared this heartbreaking quote from a local angler. He said, "I have fished for bonefish my whole life and can't find them. I haven't seen one in 5 years, and it drives me crazy."
We are essentially medicating these ecosystems out of existence. And it's not just the heavy prescription drugs either. The research points out the paracetamol problem.
Right, everyday Tylenol.
Yeah, basic acetaminophen. It's the most common fever reducer on Earth. And it is acutely toxic to almost all aquatic species. It acts as a neurotoxin to freshwater shrimp. It alters the behavioral defense mechanisms of freshwater crabs. And it causes structural damage to the pathophysiology of sea snails.
Every time we take a medication to solve a biological problem in ourselves, we are initiating a massive, uncontrolled biological experiment on the rest of the planet.
Which brings this entire deep dive back to you, the listener. Next time you take a pill, realize its journey doesn't end in your body. It travels through the pipes, into the rivers, and into the ecosystem, fundamentally altering the One Health balance of the planet.
And there is one final, really chilling thread in this research to pull on before we go. It forces us to look at how that experiment is going to backfire on humanity.
Antimicrobial resistance.
Yes. If our waterways are constantly flooded with low doses of human antibiotics, we aren't just harming wildlife. Because the dose is so highly diluted by the time it reaches the river, it isn't strong enough to actually kill the naturally occurring bacteria.
It's essentially a vaccine for the bacteria. We are giving the pathogens just enough exposure to the antibiotic to learn its chemical structure, figure out how to defeat it, and mutate.
Exactly. We are actively transforming our rivers and oceans into massive global training grounds for drug-resistant superbugs. The bacteria mutate, share genetic resistance with other microbes, and flow right back into our water tables.
So if the environmental collapse doesn't catch up to us, the invincible superbugs bred in our own discarded wastewater might.
It's a profound puzzle for the future of medicine. The next great breakthrough in pharmacology can't just be a drug that cures the patient. It has to be a green drug, a molecule brilliant enough to heal the human body, but fragile enough to safely biodegrade the moment it hits the ecosystem.
Until we figure out how to design that perfectly closed loop, the cure we swallow today is the poison the Earth drinks tomorrow. Keep that in mind the next time you open your medicine cabinet.